You're listening to the Charge Forward audio blog by Chargebacks911, bringing you the latest in payments and fraud. To learn more about how Chargebacks 911 can help you reduce chargebacks and recover revenue lost to fraud, visit us online at chargebacks911.com.
This episode is a replay of a webinar entitled, 3 Steps to More Secure Transactions, Using Payment Data to Reduce Fraud and Chargebacks, and features experts from Chargebacks 911 and Payway.
All right. Well, it is 1:02. We've had a few more people join, but we'll go ahead and get started. So good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for taking time out of your workday to be here. My name is Justin Clements. I'm the Director of PR and Media Relations for Chargebacks 911. I'm going to be serving as your host for today's webinar, where we'll be diving into 3 key steps that will ensure you're facilitating secure transactions for your customers, how to make sure your payments process is compliant, and how implementing a system that gathers and analyzes transaction data can help reduce fraudulent purchases, and with that, reduce chargebacks. So I usually start off with a little spiel just of how our webinars run for anybody who it's their first time joining us. So just wanna go over quickly how this webinar is gonna be structured. The first part of the webinar will include a short presentation. Now, this portion will have some visual elements, so it's important that if at all possible, you close any other windows that you have and give us your undivided attention. Now, the second portion of the webinar, it'll be a Q&A where we answer many of the questions that were submitted. This portion will be a little less visual, so it's okay if you just want to listen in on that part. And during the webinar, feel free to submit any questions that you have, and we promise to answer any of the questions that are submitted, if not live, then by email after the webinar. We're also going to have a version of this webinar on our podcast, Charge Forward with Chargebacks 911. This version will have a little bit more info to it. We'll tackle some more submitted questions, dive into some of this info a little bit further. So I'll tell you all about how to find those podcast episodes at the end of the webinar. But with that, that's my basic preamble. So we're going to hop right into our webinar today of the 3 steps to more secure transactions. So today I'm joined by Kimberly Miller. She is the Executive Vice President of Strategy and Operations for Payway. Kim, thanks so much for being with us today and helping us walk through some of these best practices. Just really quickly for the folks joining us today, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself and Payway?
Absolutely. Thank you, Justin. I am Kimberly Miller, the Executive Vice President of Strategy and Operations. I have a long history in helping software and technology companies go to market, increase revenue share, and basically rock the socks off of their customers in the B2B space. Payway is a cloud-based software as a service solution. We specialize in card-not-present and recurring transactions. We've been at the forefront of payments since 1985. That's when we built the platform by which the world's largest publishers began processing card-not-present transactions. Today, we're really known for helping businesses simplify and accelerate their transaction processing, and this leads to improved cash flow and significantly lowers the costs associated with accepting recurring payments. And like Justin teased, I am here to share with you 3 steps you can take to better secure transactions and how by using payment data, you can reduce fraud and chargebacks. So let's get started. So card-not-present transactions present a feeding frenzy for fraudsters. Say that a couple times fast. When that happens to your customer, they lose trust in you. And the investment you made to acquire them goes out the proverbial cash box. There are measures you can take to use payment data to prevent fraudulent transactions and retain the confidence of your customer. In this webinar, we'll learn how PCI compliance is more than a checkbox on a merchant statement, how tokens safeguard you and your customer, and methods you can use to ensure your customer is your actual customer, all while maintaining the so important frictionless checkout experience. Now, I have a little something I like to do in my presentations. If you've seen one of mine before, you know this. I have 3 numbers on screen. These numbers will pop up throughout the presentation. Keep an eye out for them. They're pretty good data points, and we'll recap them at the end, but keep an eye out. Now, if you are conducting financial transactions with customers, guess what? Your business now involves the responsibility of protecting data. Why? because the completion of a sale means you now have sensitive financial information. So credit card details, bank account numbers, personal identification data. And what happens if that data is compromised? Nothing good. Building trust between you and your customer is key to maintaining their business and your revenue. And a breach of this trust can result in damage to your reputation and loss of customer loyalty, impacting the success and sustainability of your business. And if a rising tide lifts all boats, a rise in card-not-present transactions lifts the likelihood of fraud. Card-not-present transactions tend to be more vulnerable to fraud because scammers don't need to steal a physical card. They don't need to counterfeit one or find their way around EMV chip technology in order to make the fraudulent transactions. In most cases, all they need to make a transaction is a cardholder's credentials, such as their name, billing address, account number, card value verification number, commonly known as CVV, or their card expiry dates. It can take longer for merchants to detect this type of fraud because the scammer's transactions are seemingly legitimate, which means fraudsters are often able to make multiple purchases using stolen credentials before they're found out. And there are several ways bad actors commit card-not-present fraud. Some examples include making purchases over the phone or online with stolen credit card data, or intercepting the card information customers share over email. Yes, customers still do that. Fraudsters may use stolen payment card information to set up fraudulent recurring transactions by targeting subscription or membership businesses. Skimming is a technique whereby fraudsters use malware to capture the credit card information during the digital transaction, and then they use it for card not present fraud. I know Justin mentioned they're having quite the issue with this in Florida with the skimming.
Yeah, every time I'm at a gas station, I put my card, I give that little credit card insertion, they just a little wiggle just to make sure it's not something that's taped on there. Call it paranoia, but it is, yeah, it's something we see in Florida a lot.
Yes. Yeah, and then they take those numbers and that's, you know, they take them at the gas station and they use them everywhere. Yes. So, you know, the e-commerce channel is very attractive because it's easier to conduct a high volume of fraud attacks in a short period of time. So as we see in this Chargebacks 911 statistic, merchants are often unable to even see the full scope of the problem, with 79% of fraud instances attributed to card-not-present transactions. 79%. Mm-hmm. So what is the impact? Well, merchants lose an average of $3.75 for every dollar lost to fraud. This is due to added fees, increased overhead, other losses associated with chargebacks. It adds up quickly and it directly impacts revenue. Now, by 2030, which is only 6 years from now, total payment card volume is expected to top $79 trillion. Of that amount, an estimated $49.32 billion will be lost to criminal fraud. Mm-hmm. And this is why it is so important to protect payment data, because nothing good happens when it's been compromised, whether it's at the gas station or via email or, you know, through your checkout experience. Mm-hmm. So how can you use payment data to reduce fraud and chargebacks?
Yeah, and that's a good point of we like to, you know, preach all the time about, yeah, chargebacks, they are a negative, they are a liability, but within those data points, there does lie an asset in there. So those chargebacks, that transaction data, it can provide you with a crucial understanding regarding your customer and bank interactions, the fulfillment process. So each of those, you know, that chargeback data, the transaction data that we see that come in with any given transaction, it can give you insight into, you know, the customer experience, new and developing fraud threats, those operational inefficiencies, operational redundancies, gaps in policies. So that, you know, if you're a merchant who has thousands of transactions a month, it's hard to pour through that data and segment it manually. But you know, if you're able to have some sort of a platform that works with like AI or machine learning that can segment that and kind of point out where these gaps are and where these chargebacks are facilitating through, it's actually where those chargebacks can come in handy if you're gathering that data.
Exactly. Payment data is so critical across the entire life cycle of the payment. It really informs everything. Mm-hmm. And it's probably not really considered or valued maybe as much as it could or should be, right? Mm-hmm. So some of you may be familiar with, you know, speaking of fraud and chargebacks and payment data and protecting that data. Some of you may be familiar with the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standards, often known as PCI DSS. This was established by the major card brands as a set of security requirements and best practices, specifically developed for organizations that handle credit card information. And this standard serves as a crucial framework for safeguarding the cardholder data, and it plays a crucial role in mitigating fraud and chargebacks. While specifically designed to focus on environments with payment card account data, PCI DSS can also be used to protect against threats and secure other elements in the payment ecosystem. Now, compliance with the standard contributes to fraud prevention and chargeback reduction, like Justin was saying, because you can prove you have taken the protective measures when it comes to your customers' financial data. Now, pardon me. Compliance includes several things, but we'll hit the highlights here. Secure data storage. It reduces the risk of data breaches and subsequent fraudulent activities. Compliance includes implementing access control measures so you can minimize the chances of employees misusing cardholder information. Performing regular security assessments, including vulnerability scans and penetration testing to identify and address vulnerabilities in that payment processing system. Having network security measures such as firewalls, secure configuration, and intrusion detection systems for a robust defense against unauthorized access and potential breaches is really critical. Because again, if you can protect your network, the rest of the things kind of fall in line. You want to actively monitor transactions for suspicious activities so you can identify and respond to potential fraud in real time, reducing the likelihood of chargebacks. Additional compliance measures include tokenization, which is where you take sensitive data and you make it useless for the fraudsters, even if it's intercepted. There's also data masking, which involves concealing parts of sensitive information. This further limits the exposure of cardholder data. You should also educate staff and users, as they're then more likely to follow the security practices, which helps reduce the risk of human error that could lead to fraud and chargebacks. If they don't know about it, they can't help with it. So definitely want to be educating your staff and users. And finally, PCI DSS mandates organizations have an incident response plan. This ensures a timely and effective response to any security incidents, minimizing the impact of potential fraud, preventing chargebacks, and associated with those breaches. Now, PCI DSS has been around for some time. Again, these are the high-level overview of the most critical standards related to card data security. But in March of 2022, the council released version 4 of PCI DSS, and that introduced several changes meant to strengthen the payment card account data security. There has been a grace period for implementation, but as of March 31st of this year, as in 2 weeks from now, phase 1 of the new standards must be in place, and phase 2 is due in March 2025. Most organizations are prepared for the upcoming changes, and they've been working to make the necessary updates. But you should still familiarize yourself with version 4.0 and understand the changes from the prior version. Some are changes, some are enhancements. Of the 13 new requirements, there are 7 that will impact merchants. These key requirements include encrypting all sensitive authentication data, sometimes known as SAD, regardless of whether the primary account number is present. And this requirement ensures heightened security in handling authentication data. You're having an automated phishing protection mechanism to measure and fortify defenses against social engineering threats, reducing the potential for malware and ransomware attacks. Maintaining an inventory of all scripts on your e-commerce payment pages. This includes ensuring the integrity of each script to prevent unauthorized modifications and verifying their authorization and execution. 12-character passwords for users and administrators accessing cardholder data are now the norm. Yes, I'm very sorry. You now have to memorize a 12-character password. And you should also encourage the use of passphrases for added security. Employing authentication methods when conducting internal vulnerability scans. This enhances the accuracy and detail of vulnerability assessments and provides a comprehensive view of potential security risks. Having a change in tamper detection mechanism in place to ensure unauthorized modifications are quickly reported to security personnel to maintain security. And finally, merchants with cardholder data environments, also known as CDE, must periodically verify their PCI scope. This involves identifying data flows, documenting storage methods, encryption, access controls, as well as assessing any changes that may impact security. Now, many of the items that we just went through fall not just to you, but to your vendors and partners. Any third-party service provider who deals with your customer's card data must comply with the standard. If they don't, you are considered non-compliant and risk fines and a shutdown of your payment system. It does happen, and sometimes not where you think it would. Payway was working with a potential customer, and during the initial stages of integration, we discovered the website hosting service the customer was using wasn't capturing payment data in compliance with PCI standards. A workflow put the card data they'd been processing at risk. It basically exposed all of their customer credit card data. We let all the parties know, and we would not proceed until the vendor proved they were compliant and that the customer could then show us that they were within the standards of PCI DSS.
Man, so that's, and thank you for breaking that down, because, you know, looking at those first few slides, seeing all those different measures that were put in place, I mean, that's an entire team's job in and of itself to make sure that you're compliant with 4.0. But then also, you know, having to make sure that you're on top of all of the new changes or amendments, additions to all that, making sure you're on top of that. I mean, that can be a lot in and of itself. But then also making sure every vendor that might be handling this customer's data, making sure that they are. I mean, that it sounds like there's you know, while this is absolutely necessary, it sounds like there's a lot of places where, you know, there could be some cracks in the system where, you know, to not be PCI compliant. So that sounds like a lot to do from a merchant perspective, especially if you're one working with a smaller team, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, larger, you know, businesses and larger enterprises and corporations, I mean, they have entire teams that this is all they do. That's how critical it is. It's harder for the smaller parties, which is why it's so important that you work with third-party providers that can prove they're in compliance. Because failing to meet compliance can be expensive. You risk significant fines, chargebacks, higher transaction fees, and restrictions on conducting payment transactions. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen customers of ours that didn't do what they were supposed to, and they've gotten letters from their merchant provider saying, you're out of compliance. Like, you have 15 days to make this right, or we're turning off the account. Wow. You know, yeah. I mean, it's a very serious thing, because it is, I mean, if you think about your credit card information, your cardholder data and all that goes with it, it's it's pretty intense and important, right? It's your identity. And it applies so many places, but more than we can even consider. Really, you'll start curling up in a ball sometimes if you start thinking about all the implications. There are ways to ensure you're compliant. Again, stay up to date on the PCI standards. It's a website you can go. They've got these great visuals to help you understand who's responsible for what. I don't know if I emphasize this or not, do not ignore the emails from your merchant provider asking you to fill out a questionnaire. Not only will you then be in compliance, but you're going to save yourself the monthly non-compliance fee. And depending on your provider, that can be significant. So there is a cost savings involved in just being compliant. You also want to make sure your payment provider uses tokens. Now, in payment processing, tokenization protects the sensitive information during the transaction by replacing the data with a unique string of randomly generated characters called a token. Relationships between the original value and token values get stored in a secure vault. When a user or application needs the correct data, the system looks up the token value and retrieves the original value. And then customers who are performing multiple repeated or recurring transactions don't have to continue entering that payment information for every purchase because it's stored within the token. Now, for tokenization to work, you need a payment gateway to store the sensitive data that allows for the random token to be generated and satisfies PCI security standards for credit card processors. So when you're talking to a gateway, make sure that they do those things. Really important to know too is if somehow a bad actor intercepts the token, they can't do anything with it. Tokens are a great way to reduce risk and fend off chargebacks.
Yeah, and I love that you brought this up, Kim, because that's something that sort of hit our radar, for something that we've been seeing in the news sort of like late last year. But just the idea of it is really important and can really safeguard a lot of transactions, because like you said, it's, the sensitive data stays with that merchant and the payment processor, but, it goes out as sort of randomized information. So yeah, if you are a bad actor and you get a hold of that, you don't have sensitive information. You just have this random, this random information that's associated back to sensitive data. So it's a really cool new item that's kind of making its way into payments and hoping to see more of it and see it get refined.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a complex process that's easily handled by the right payment provider that provides so much protection for you. Mm-hmm. So it's again, to reduce the risk and fending off the chargebacks, it's definitely the way to go. There is another way you can actually use payment data to reduce the risk, and that's to implement level 3 processing. It's a great way for businesses engaged in B2B transactions to provide the detailed information about each sale, and this actually can lead to reduced interchange fees. The lower rates are possible because providing detailed line item data gives the card issuers and the payment processors more information about the nature of the transaction. So that detailed data serves as a valuable tool for mitigating fraud because it provides that comprehensive information about each transaction. This allows businesses to better authenticate the parties involved, and they can then detect any irregularities in the transaction data. Implementing level 3 processing, it may involve using a specialized payment system or software that can capture and transmit the required detailed data. You definitely want to talk to your gateway providers about that. It's important for businesses, though, to ensure their payment infrastructure. You definitely want to make sure that what you have or what you're going to have can support those level 3 capabilities. Now, let's say you've done the work, you've checked with your third-party providers, you're PCI DSS compliant, you've got tokenization in place, you're processing the level 3 transactions. I mean, you have checked all the marks to make sure that you are protecting data. So now we can just relax and not worry as much about the fraud and the chargebacks, because now it's all good. only. How do you know that the customer that entered the payment information is the actual customer? In 2022, Europe made strong customer authentication a requirement to help reduce fraud and make online payments more secure. Any individual with a credit card issued in the European Economic Area that makes an online purchase must go through extra layers of authentication. Now, I know we're not in Europe, but the reason I mention the strong customer authentication requirement is for two reasons. One, what happens in Europe from a payment or data security perspective, it doesn't stay in Europe. Eventually, it comes to the US. Think GDPR. For every website that you now have to manage your cookie preferences, you can thank Europe. Now, two, the intention of the strong customer authentication requirement is to reduce fraud, provide added security to online payments, and act as a frictionless authentication, improving the payment experience and providing security against the emergence of new online payment threats. These seem like best practices. So to mimic the SCA, consider its three main criteria for authentication: something the customer knows, something the customer has, or the customer themselves. Many methods will get you there. All of them will contribute to your chargeback strategy. For instance, fraud prevention. Customer authentication helps prevent unauthorized transactions by verifying the identity of the person making the purchase. This is particularly important in online transactions because the person and the card aren't there. You cannot verify that. So multi-factor authentication methods, such as one-time passwords or biometric verification, add that extra layer of security to ensure the person initiating the transaction is the actual person initiating the transaction. You want to make sure it's the legitimate cardholder. So how do you prove this? Well, in cases where chargebacks are initiated by customers who claim they did not make or authorize a transaction, customer authentication provides evidence the transaction was legitimate. And this proof can include authentication logs, IP addresses, and other details that support the fact the transaction happened. Now, when a customer disputes a legitimate transaction without malicious intent, it's called friendly fraud. Customer authentication through methods like 3D Secure can help reduce friendly fraud because you're ensuring the cardholder acknowledges and authenticates the transaction at the time of purchase. So how big of a problem is friendly fraud? Well, in 2023, a Chargebacks 911 survey, respondents reported a 19% increase in incidents of friendly fraud over the past 3 years, which is a concern considering that chargeback activity was expected to decline after COVID. Data published by Visa suggests that 75% of all chargebacks issued in 2022 were cases of friendly fraud rather than true criminal fraud. And I'm going to say that one more time just to think about this. Think about the fact that for every dollar lost to fraud, it costs you $3.75. And think about the fact that 75% of chargebacks are not criminal. They're friendly fraud. It's not criminal fraud.
Yeah, just to give some of our listeners a dollar figure for that, you know, so we recently came out with our cardholder dispute index in January, where we surveyed about 4,000 consumers. And some of the data that we got back from that shows that in 2023, about $65 billion worth of transactions were overturned through the chargeback mechanism. So, you know, if you look at $65 billion and think, wow, 75% of that was lost, you know, and it shouldn't have been. And, you know, and those were transactions that were actually valid in instances of friendly fraud or first party misuse. It's a I don't know. It all that number almost makes you a little nauseous when you think that that was just lost unnecessarily. You know, it if only, you know, either, you know, mechanisms were in place to protect it, or if consumers, you know, actually knew what was going on the back end. Because one thing we found out through our consumer survey as well is, you know, that 74% of consumers see contacting the merchant for a refund and contacting the bank to initiate a chargeback were equivalent processes. And, you know, anybody who you know, is familiar with chargebacks knows that that's not the case. You know, there's a lot more that goes into the back end, you know, including, like you said, $3.75 to every dollar lost to fraud. So, you know, think of that $65 billion and, you know, and tack $3.75 onto every dollar. That's, I mean, you're looking at a massive figure.
Yeah, I mean, it's now, yeah. I mean, it's crazy because, you know, with COVID, it was like, okay, people don't want to go out. They don't want to go to the post office and, you know, they can't go to the stores and therefore they're shipping everything. And it's like, oh, wait, no, I didn't order this. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, no, maybe I don't need this. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's been a few years now. Everything's open. Mm-hmm. It's easier than ever to return things. I mean, I went to Staples the other day to return an Amazon package. And yet, because it is so easy to just go in and say, nope, dispute the charge, you know, it's almost like that's where the friction point should be. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to get too far off topic, but that's just my way of thinking is it's been made so easy to do that. Maybe we could help with these chargebacks, not only working with you guys, but maybe, you know, making them return the product.
Yeah. Well, as a merchant, you know, you're competing with an issuing bank for convenience for that customer. And if, you know, if online banking, you can dispute a charge with, you know, a click of a button on your phone. It's like, that's a tough convenience to compete with. So, and as you can see from, you know, from this graph, from data that we have, you know, this is something that's, you know, that's the new normal, which makes it even more important that something be done about it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that is such an excellent point. You know, talking about secure and stronger customer authentication methods, one of the things we've mentioned, and I'll go into a little more detail on, is 3D Secure. 3D Secure, it actually takes the transaction specific information, like the shipping address, and contextual information, like what's their order history, you know, what have they shopped for before, either here or elsewhere, and it verifies the identity of the shopper. And adding this to the checkout process, speaking of friction, it actually doesn't add or create friction. In fact, it can result in higher authorizations and reduce chargebacks. The other thing to note is with 3D Secure, it shifts the liability off the merchant and onto the cardholder's bank. So when you're looking at refuting chargebacks and doing all these things, I mean, 3D Secure is just such a natural thing to start with, probably, if you haven't done some of these other things, just for that alone, just shifting that liability so that you don't have to deal with it, especially if you're a smaller mid-sized business and you don't have entire corporate divisions dedicated to this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you aren't accepting digital wallets, consider this. Apple Pay and Google Pay, they already support authentication. It's built in. Biometric and password. It's a great way for businesses to offer that frictionless checkout experience while meeting the SCA requirements. And again, digital wallets, the adoption is growing at a phenomenal rate. It's not going anywhere as far as a payment method.
Right. And I think even from our field report last year where we surveyed merchants, we found that 53% of those that were surveyed in that field report, you know, they are now accepting e-wallet payments for transactions. So, I mean, any merchant out there with a digital storefront, you know, they're well aware that, you know, this transition from e-commerce that COVID kind of forced upon us, it's here to stay. So, you know, look into those digital wallets because there are some benefits that come in on the back end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, before we wrap up, I just want to revisit the three numbers from the start, as promised. Second, there we go. Where'd it go? Sorry, a little trigger happy with the forward button. So we actually covered these in the presentation. 79%. That's how much fraud is attributed to card not present transactions. Think about that. It is mind boggling. 79% of fraud is card not present transactions. And you consider the size of, e-commerce and online transactions. It's mind-boggling. Seven, that is the number of new PCI DSS requirements you need to be aware of. Talk to your provider, make sure that they have done what they should be doing. 19, that's the percentage average increase in friendly fraud as reported in a Chargebacks 911 survey. Now, we've talked a lot about payment data. We've talked about friction, frictionless, all of these things. I think it's really important to note that implementing payment security measures, it is a fundamental aspect of safeguarding sensitive customer information. Because remember, if you've taken the payment, you are now in payment security business. You might not have realized it, but you are. So utilizing encryption technologies, secure payment gateways, multi-factor authentication, these are all ways to reduce the risk of unauthorized access and fraudulent activities. However, it's equally important to maintain a user-friendly payment experience that doesn't compromise efficiency or frustrate customers. Lengthy and complex security processes can deter potential buyers and lead to abandoned transactions. I do not want to identify the fire hydrant any longer. Okay. Whenever implementing payment security, see if it impacts customer purchasing behavior. Assess whether that security is resulting in more false declines, and then measure the business outcomes until they're optimal with the payment security in place. Find that balance. Really just adhering to the PCI DSS standards, using tokens, implementing customer authentication methods, protect your business and your customers. And the key lies in finding that right balance between stringent payment security and a seamless customer experience. But when you prioritize both aspects, you not only protect your customers and your business, you enhance trust, satisfaction, and create repeat business in the long run.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And then you hit the nail right on the head with finding that balance, right? I mean, because you do want to make sure you're as secure as possible, but at what point does security, overlap with, meeting a lot of, the folks that are at their cart looking to check out and going through all these security compliances with you guys, the different authentications, and then leaving that cart, where it's at and not following through with the checkout process. It can be tough to find that middle ground, but being able to find that sweet spot is going to be most important. So I think you nailed it there, Kim.
Yeah, it's really important. Thanks, Justin. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that is the end of our presentation portion. And again, Kim, thank you so much for breaking it down. I know there's especially with just the portion of PCI DSS compliance. I mean, even that we could spend, several webinars going into all of that. But thank you for breaking that down and into layman's terms. So, we're gonna go into some of the questions that we had that were pre-submitted, and if we have time, we'll go into the questions that were submitted live. But we'll hop in right here and get these questions answered for you guys as best we can. So, first question comes from John. John asks, how is AI being leveraged to protect consumers with payments and chargebacks? I think from PayWish perspective and Chargebacks 911, obviously AI is everywhere. I'll kind of go into a little bit of how Chargebacks 911 is using AI and leveraging that data, and then Kim, I'll let you go into how PayWay is using it. But for Chargebacks over here, as I mentioned before, it's that transaction data is something that, especially when it comes through from chargebacks, chargebacks are in and of themselves a liability. But when you look at that transaction data to be able to find those different trends, those different things that you're seeing, that data can be really useful. But if you're dealing with thousands of transactions a month, if you're somebody who's seeing that sort of sales volume, having something that is based in AI or machine learning can kind of segment all those things apart. So that's something that we're able to look at. Chargeback data and where those reason codes are at, where those chargebacks are being sourced from, we're able to see, you know, if it's something where it's a gap in policy, or if it's something where a merchant's customer service department isn't being as attentive or as responsive. We're able to see that, where the merchant was unable to be contacted, so they've gone to the bank. Those are different ways where we're able to kind of take all that big data and kind of be able to see the finer points in those, like where these chargebacks are coming from and different optimizations that can be made to kind of help shore up where those chargebacks are stemming from. And that's just that's just one piece of how we can use AI to mitigate and prevent chargebacks. But yeah, Ken, how are you guys using AI over there at Payway?
Yeah, sure. And I've been at a couple of conferences the past few months, and I have to say AI and payments and banking is such a hot topic right now. So this is such a great question. I would say it's more like we have certain machine learnings in place. We're processing millions of transactions a day. And what we look for is anomalies. So if we have, a certain, let's say, subscription company, suddenly the volume of signups has gone up over a certain percentage level, we immediately look into that because something's not right. Right. And so that's how we use the machine learning, is to sort of help us navigate that. And then we can take a look and say, okay, listen, is this a carding attack? Is this just call them up? Hey, were you guys running a promotion of some sort that suddenly like we've seen this increase? And for us, it's, we want to help eliminate chargebacks because we want to, prevent them from happening. And so by looking at those patterns of volume and intensity, we can tell whether or not, there's some sort of fraud happening. And if there is, we alert the customer, and then we can actually help them, shut down the page temporarily or do whatever they need to do, or notify their subscription management company. So those are some of the ways that we're using it.
Yeah. And just to touch on a little bit too, there's kind of a darker side to AI too, right? Since it's kind of a new emerging technology that's still getting fleshed out a little bit, depending, if you're using a fraud filter, that's the parameters on it are really strict. I mean, you could be in a situation where you're depending on AI, but the algorithms and the data that it's basing decisions off of might be either too strict or maybe even sometimes incorrect. I mean, your business could be at risk of issuing false declines and marking legitimate Correct. Transactions as fraudulent, right? And then you're turning away honest customers or loyal customers even. So, it's something, while yes, it's a useful tool that we can become more capable of depending on it. Now that since we're kind of in the early stages, be sure that you're keeping an eye on the parameters and how exactly it's basing its decisions, because there could be some negative effects if it's not being done correctly.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't want declines, but you certainly don't want false declines, because you've spent and invested so much in acquiring that customer. To then have them rejected at the checkout page is painful. You have to. And again, it's that balance. Right, that I was talking about. You want the security in place, but you also, you have to. It's risk versus reward.
Mm-hmm. All right. This next question comes from Francisco, who asks, for card not present, what requirement should we implement for us to win in case of chargebacks? The one thing that we preach to all of our merchants is respond to every chargeback. Now, that's not saying fight every chargeback, but it does mean assess and respond to, where these chargebacks are coming from. So if it's something where you realize it's merchant error and you need to issue a refund, if it's something where you have an alert set up, responding back to each and every one is going to give you that data. And again, that data is going to help you refine your business operations, those new trends and fraud. So we always say that. And then kind of what Kim touched on before of those elements of authentication, having those, not only is good for preventing fraudulent transactions, but should you find yourself in a case where you're receiving a chargeback that stems from either friendly fraud or first party misuse, having all of those elements that prove that was an honest transaction will be really useful if you decide to fight that chargeback and you're in the representment phase of trying to get that chargeback overturned. The more evidence that you have of that, that shows that no, the buyer is who is, you know, we thought it was. It was a legitimate transaction. That's where all those you know, having those authentication measures can come back and be used as compelling evidence to make sure that that honest transaction is protected and you're not losing revenue unnecessarily.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to even go one step further back, right? It's when they're initiating that chargeback. They're looking at their statement. So one of the things you really want to make sure is, you know, that you're presenting yourself as who you are. And I say that meaning it comes down to the descriptor. Oftentimes we check our, you know, people actually do still check their merchant statements. And if they see a name they don't recognize, they're going to initiate a chargeback. We had a customer who was going through a lot of mergers and acquisitions. And suddenly he called me and they suddenly, you know, had an increase in fees. And I took a look at their statement for them. And I said, well, you've got like a lot of chargebacks. Mm-hmm. And we tied that to they had just acquired a series of publications and did not update the descriptors. And so these people that had been receiving this publication for years under a different name suddenly saw a new one and had no idea who it was because it just wasn't something they looked at. And so, you know, there are certain things that you can do and be proactive about that will actually help you go a long way. You know, again, you have to have the authentication, you have to do all of those pieces, but just also just from the way you describe your business on the merchant statement, that's going to help.
Yeah, that's a really good point because even if you receive a chargeback, you take it to representment and you win that back, you still have to pay that chargeback fee. That chargeback ding still goes on your merchant account. So just like Kim said, that billing descriptor, really glad you brought that up because that billing descriptor is a good way to prevent chargebacks from happening in the first place. And actually from our cardholder dispute index, that consumer survey I mentioned that we released in January, we saw that unrecognized billing descriptors were the leading cause of chargebacks from consumers who said that they had filed one in the last 12 months. I think somewhere around like 86% of those that were surveyed who said that they had filed one was due to an unrecognizable billing descriptor. So, I mean, that's an easy way to prevent a lot of chargebacks from happening just out of basic confusion. So,
yeah, and if every dollar is $375 and 86% is, you know, hey, I don't know who this is. What a way to save some revenue,
right?
And not get dinged on your merchant score. Because by the way, merchants, you are scored by the issuing authorities by just making sure that that descriptor is in place. So definitely want to talk to your payment solution provider and make sure they have dynamic and soft descriptors in place.
Mm-hmm. All right, this next question comes from Evan, who asks, how can a payment processor effectively reduce incoming chargebacks for our clients? Kim, I'll let you take this one. This one sounds right up your alley.
Gosh, just replay the webinar. you know, all of those things that we've been discussing, but you know, I think a definite way we can reduce the chargebacks is, again, all of those things we've been talking about, right? Making sure that we're working with your merchant statement, your merchant provider, getting those soft descriptors in place. Okay, let's take a look. Is there a carding attack? Is there fraud happening? Ways we can mitigate that. And then, you know, helping you make sure that your customer is actually your customer by offering 3D Secure, you know, by sending multi-factor authentication methods. It's really what we've been talking about. It's just all of those things help. And I guess I should point out too is, I mean, I know I should point this out. You know, we've been talking, we covered a lot of content. And like you said, the PCI DSS stuff, I mean, there's entire organizations dedicated to, you know, doing that and helping figure all of those things out and doing the testing and the iterations. You don't have to do everything all at once. You can actually just phase this stuff in and measure how it's doing. Because again, it comes back to that balance, right? So implement 3D Secure and see if that helps reduce your chargebacks. Mm-hmm. Put the soft descriptors in place. That would actually be the first thing I would do. See what that does. So all of these are little steps that are going to add up and help you have a better payment experience. And all of these factors, your customer will trust you more if they know you're making these efforts, because they realize you're looking out for them. And as a payment, you know, solution provider, we're looking out for our customers who are then looking out for their customers.
Right. And if you're a large corporation who, you know, you have a whole team dedicated to chargeback management, you know, one thing that we would suggest that we haven't covered today would be to just make sure that you're staying up with the card network's rule updates, especially those that that revolve around transaction disputes. About twice a year, the major card networks will come out with updates to those the transaction dispute processes that they have. For example, last year we saw that Visa had implemented compelling evidence 3.0. Just it kind of changes the parameters and the items that count as compelling evidence, right? So the industry is kind of making this shift where they're recognizing that friendly fraud and first party misuse is a huge issue that we need to do a better job as an industry in tackling. So you're starting to see some of those changes come down to kind of level the playing field. So all of the burden and financial fallout that comes from chargebacks doesn't necessarily fall completely on the merchant, especially those that, you know, like Visa says, up to 75% are cases of illegitimate chargebacks. So just stay up to date with the card networks, all the ones that you guys accept, and make sure that you're staying up to date on their reason codes, what constitutes as compelling evidence, those sort of things. All right. And our final question comes from Lisa, who asks, what can I do to ensure that the card user is the card holder? We did kind of go over this just a little bit, some things that you can do to make sure that person putting in that card information is the card holder themselves. But Kim, just real quick, if you want to reiterate those points of some of the things that you can do or implement to make sure that person who's entering that card information is the card holder themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, multi-factor authentication, you know, sending them a code, making sure it's the user, digital wallets, you know, it's a biometric, it's a password protected, are some of the, you know, those methods. You know, on the back end, you can look at, okay, the IP addresses, some of the historical data. All of that can be used, and this is where AI can come in, right? Take a look, make sure that person is actually that person. And then, you know, implement third parties. There are plenty of organizations out there that are helping customers do this today. They're helping providers like us offer those solutions. So really, I think start with, you know, is this a problem? Are you having this problem? How can you fix it? Who can you work with? And what measures can you put into place? And multi-factor authentication is probably the simplest right now. And then 3D secure.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next question comes from Daryl, who asks, does a customer ticking a checkbox allow you to refute a chargeback? That is, there's a little bit of nuance to that area. So obviously a customer ticking a checkbox can be used as a piece of compelling evidence if you're if it's something where you're submitting your terms and conditions, those sort of things, but that by itself won't refute a chargeback. So that's where you need some of those other elements that we were talking about in the webinar that can work as compelling evidence. So those biometrics, the IP addresses, or device information, you know, the passcodes, the CVV numbers, all those can be used as compelling evidence as well. So I guess it's yes and no to your question, Daryl. While it will help to show that whoever was making the transaction did, you know, agree to any sort of terms and conditions that you might have had, that by itself won't prove that the transaction wasn't fraudulent. All right, so our next question comes from Katie, who asks, what are some best practices for protecting my subscription-based business from chargeback? And I'll let you go into this one, Kim. I will say, just starting off, like subscription-based companies who provide those sort of services, they are at higher risk of getting a chargeback. That comes from some people either doing Free trials where automatic billing starts afterward, or people who sign up for a subscription and forget about it. And then when they do realize, they go and file chargebacks for all those months previously. Kim, are there any best practices that you see from the payment side of how subscription-based businesses can protect themselves from transaction disputes?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that you hit upon, I'll just expand on a little bit about the risk factor. Subscription-based businesses and recurring payment businesses are considered high risk. That actually elevated into an even higher risk category during COVID. It's come back down a little bit. But it's just, like you said, it's a high risk because there are chargebacks and folks are like, wait, no, I don't want this anymore. And like we were saying, the friction point isn't there. So it's just much easier to just say, nope, didn't order it. I would say some best practices. There's a couple of things you can do. Work with your subscription management company to offer a pause feature. That way, one, they're not, if the customer decides they don't want the subscription, they can actually pause and think about it for a little bit. Then the next time, if they go and they issue that chargeback, you've got evidence that they paused the subscription. And so clearly they made that purchase. So that is something I would consider and work with your subscription management company on. Other best practices. Go ahead, Justin, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, that hadn't even occurred to me that if you do have a pause feature in place, that in and of itself, if a customer does go on there to pause subscription services, that is them acknowledging that transaction in the first place was legitimate. So that's actually a really interesting point that you brought up.
Yeah. That's my logic working. we'll go talk to some of our partners and see if they're able to track that data. Just to me, it's logical that would be a case there. I think some of the other things that you can do, you want to make sure, and this is always something that is somewhat of a hot topic, depending on the department you're with. So in most subscription companies, you have your acquisition department and then you have your retention department. And the acquisition department is going to offer out the very best deal they can to acquire the customer because that is what their KPIs are, right? It's all about the acquisition. They've acquired the customer and inevitably the rate goes from 99 cents or $1.99 to the actual now new non-trial rate. And that is where you see a bulk of these chargebacks happen. Which really ticks off the retention teams, right? Because they've now not been able to retain them because they've issued these chargebacks, they've got declines, their department is getting hammered. I think personally, the worst thing ever is a 99 cent subscription offer. It's going to end up killing you. One, it's ripe for carding attacks, which is going to be bad. Then you're going to have additional chargebacks and fraud. And then you also have the customer knowing that they can cancel and come back because you're going to send them an offer to do, an equally financially beneficial offer just to keep them. And so you've got people that are gaming the system. So just not from a payments perspective, but just from an actual like subscription management basis, kind of think about your acquisition and your retention teams and your offer strategy. Take into consideration, you are already considered high risk. And the more you start seeing these declines and these chargebacks, the likelier you are to have an increase in costs for just processing those transactions.
Yeah, we even saw earlier last year that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually suggested a rule change for negative option billing, saying that these subscription-based services and those that are using negative option need to make the cancellation process of their services just as easy or have the equivalent amount of steps as it took to sign up for that service. So, sometimes you run into subscription-based services that, it's a one-click sign up, but to be able to cancel that service takes like 5, 6, 7 steps, calling in a number, sending an email, those sort of things. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is looking to kind of even that playing field out. So just make sure to keep an eye on that and how that comes down the pike. Right now, it's just a rule change suggestion. Nothing official has been made, but that's something that they are looking to change.
Yeah, and that's a great point. We've been at some subscription conferences and this comes up, and I like to attend the legal seminars just to learn different things. And you would be amazed at the major name brands that make it oh so difficult to cancel that subscription. And yeah, a lot of times it's just easier to do that chargeback. I believe right now you can't make it more than three steps. It might be four, but I think you can't like direct them to more than three pages in order to get that subscribe. And that's why I brought up pausing. If on that page, make it super. On one page, it should say, hey, I want to pause, or hey, nope, change my mind, I don't want this. And that should be it. It should be as easy as unsubscribing from email is really how it should be. And again, while, you know, the suggestion is being made, maybe don't wait for the suggestion to become the rule. Maybe actually make yourself the better brand and instill that trust in your customers and build up that positive reputation by making it just as easy to walk away as it was to sign up.
Yeah, recognizing that sentiment and hey, maybe that's the direction that folks are moving in. Yeah, no, that's a great way to be proactive. That's a very good suggestion. All right, our next question comes from Scott, who says, how do I handle chargebacks facilitated through PayPal, issuing banks, or Stripe? So, you know, I'll just go back to what we advise to all of our merchants is to respond to every chargeback, right? So again, if it's merchant error and you're issuing a refund, respond to that chargeback, letting them know that it is merchant error and you'll be issuing a refund. For those where you do have, you know, any sort of compelling evidence that might be able to overturn it, make sure that you submit that. But the key is responding and not letting those go unanswered, because you're losing some of that data too, even data from your side and input that you put in there. That's something that you can work into all the data that you have. So when you go back and review, you know, where these chargebacks are coming from and how you responded, you'll have all that in there. So that's one way to do it. Those chargebacks through issuing banks, you know, those are typically where you're going to see those chargebacks come through, especially those, for cardholders. That's usually the first person that they contact is the bank that card was issued through. So that's typically the first call, especially if they're doing online banking, which you're seeing more and more people handle their finances through. Kim, do you have any specifics for how to avoid transaction disputes for anybody who's using PayPal or Stripe or some other means of card processing?
Well, I think it goes back to the basics, right? Offhandedly, I would say, you know, if you can handle chargebacks facilitated by Stripe by not signing up for Stripe, come to Payway. But I think really the reality is that, you know, you want to take immediate action. You want to make sure you have as much payment data as you can. You want to be overly communicative. And, I think it's really important to work with your processors and your partners, because again, there's a gray area here. So there are payment solution companies that it's a bundle of the gateway and the merchant. Right. And they do all the underwriting. And then you have companies that offer services that, you know, are you can have the gateway and you can bring your own merchant, or you can have them help you acquire a merchant. And all of those things play into who is your point of contact. And so that's really important. For companies like us, we make sure that we have the customer service. That's we want our customers to be able to reach out to us, because if they can't reach their acquiring bank or they can't reach their merchant provider, we'll do that for them. Because we just want, at the end of the day, it's customer experience and customer satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And at every point within that ecosystem, you should be working on the behalf of your customer to make sure that it happens as quickly as it can, because there's high costs involved, there's resources involved, and, you know, merchants really are in the business of selling what they sell and what they need to sell, and they don't need to be they're not in payments, right? So rely on your payment and your third-party providers to help out with that.
Yeah, great point. All right, so our last question that we have is, just looking ahead, forward thinking. Heather asks, what do I need to know about upcoming security changes? So, Kim, I know you touched on some of the PCI compliance updates that some of, phase one is being implemented now, phase two coming up in 2025. Just from our perspective from transaction dispute and chargebacks, for those, just make sure that you're staying up to date on all those card networks that you accept payments from, being up to date on any changes to their reason code, what constitutes as compelling evidence. Staying up to date on those will really help you adapt to the rules. And if you're a large corporation, you've got teams dedicated to that, make sure that there is, part of their workload is educating themselves, checking the latest trends and news as it pertains to any compliance or security changes. But if you're a smaller team and you've got folks that are wearing multiple hats, and say if you have your customer service representatives that handle chargebacks and look into that, it can be pretty daunting, especially when you have priorities in other areas. It might be, depending on your sales volume, it might be good to look into a third party partner that could be able to look at those things. Because just speaking from chargebacks 911 perspective, I mean, staying up to date with PCI compliance, with card network rule changes, those are things that we focus on every single day. So, and it's something that's implemented into our software and our platform. So being able to partner with somebody where that is their main focus and not something that your team has to juggle while focusing on business development or, sales processes, those sort of things, you can help alleviate that. And it might even be able to save you money from overhead costs. So just something to look at. But yeah, make sure that you're staying up to date with any of the rule changes that are coming down the pike, because a lot of them are now being geared to help merchants out more so than they have in the past.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other thing too is, especially for small and mid-sized companies, like, you definitely want to rely on the third-party providers, like you said. Also, PCI DSS, it's a website you can go. There's, wonderful resources there that you can read through if you feel like, diving into that to get a better knowledge, you can. But, again, for small, mid-sized, that's your business is your business. It's not necessarily payment data and security and chargeback mitigation and remedy. So work with your third-party providers. And then, the other thing is just to mention, I don't know if I got to it before or not, is we get requests all the time. We actually have paperwork that shows that we're PCI certified, that we're within scope, that we've done everything that we're supposed to do, and up with all the updated changes that are coming. So as a merchant, you can actually just ask your third-party provider to share with you their certificate of compliance, and that hopefully will, help you sleep a little better at night. Because in order to have that compliance, they need to have been aware of all the upcoming changes. And again, it goes back to that chart of who's responsible for what.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Kim, for joining us for this podcast episode. I know that it's a lot of information. Some of it can be daunting, but really appreciate you breaking it down to making it as simple as possible. Really appreciate your expertise coming, especially from the payment side and the gateway point of view of how merchants can make sure that they are facilitating safe and secure transactions while also making sure it's as frictionless as possible. It's a tough chord to strike, but you did a really good job of breaking it down. So very much appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Charge Forward with Chargebacks 911. We do have a visual element of this podcast episode from our webinar that is available. Go to our website to check that out at www.chargebacks911.com, and send an email to info@chargebacks911.com if you have any questions or want to request any other information that you might have. We'd be happy to help. So thank you very much, and everyone have a good day.